Podcast Live, Studio A, Global Media News, SUNY Old Westbury College Campus in Old Westbury, New York.
It's Global Media News time, live from Studio A. This is Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Juan Salazar.
And I'm Amanda Saguna. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio.
This week in New Media News...
Is Snapchat snatching Facebook users?
Why is Snapchat opening its Discover Publisher stories to college newspapers?
Why are consumer giant Unilever threatening to pull its advertising billions from social media?
Why is Instagram rolling out new features? Could it have something to do with Snapchat?
Why are there so many viral political memes?
Which platform will dominate the streaming market for gaming fans, Twitch or YouTube?
Why is Facebook having such a hard time holding on to young users? All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Let's talk about Snapchat. Snap is the hot platform for the youth market. What makes Snap so attractive to younger users, and how is this affecting other social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram? Christine Scamling is here in Studio 8 to talk about how Snapchat has been taking users from Facebook. Christine, what is Snapchat doing right?
I think it's just like easier to navigate. Like the algorithm is more easy. So why are millennials flocking to Snapchat and deserting Facebook? According to a new study conducted by eMarketer, Americans aged from 12 to 17 will lose Facebook about once a month. eMarketer expects to lose about 2 million users under the age of 25, and Snapchat will gain about 1.9 million users from that age range. Snapchat has recently undergone a new update that has irritated many users because it seems to be more confusing to use. The update was apparently to make using the app easier and to introduce to older crowds. But with the update, users seem to prefer Snapchat over Facebook because it's just too tedious to try and keep track of. The study also concludes that more teens are becoming inactive on Facebook or just not signing up for the website at all. Originally, to sign up for Facebook, you needed to be a college student or the age of 18. Users who were younger during that time could just put in a different birth date. Teens now can sign up at the age of 13 or with a parent's help and aren't signing up now altogether. Even though Facebook owns Instagram, users can't save them there either since the algorithm change. Facebook has now become a place for the older generation to keep in contact and with distant relatives and high school reunions. Millennials want social media privacy from their parents and relatives. Facebook is still one of the dominant social media websites with 169.5 million users versus Snapchat's 86.5 million users.
And how do you feel about Facebook users going to Snapchat?
Frankly, I think it's been this way ever since, like, I remember MySpace crashing in about, like, ninth grade. Facebook was originally just for, like, college students, but I remember, like, all my friends, like, put in, like, their fake birthdays to sign up, and, like, eventually, like, I did the same. It's a lot similar to Facebook, even though there's not, like, that top five friends thing, because I, like, literally had friends fighting over that. In high school, like, I created, like, Twitter to, like, follow people. Eventually, Snapchat came along, which now a lot of people tend to prefer. Yeah, there might be a lot of people who do use Facebook, but that doesn't mean they're using it all the time. I know plenty of people who have just, like, deactivated their Facebook because teachers and, like, adults always say, like, oh, like, you know, jobs, look at your Facebook and all your social media, whatever.
Next question for you is, has Facebook become obsolete for millennials?
Personally, myself and my friends, we don't really use Facebook much anymore. People kind of just tend to, like, upload, like, milestones that happen in their life. Like, if they're pregnant, if they're getting married, I guess, like, holidays that occur, and they just kind of keep it moving. Like, it's not really something I see, like, millennials using, just uploading pictures and stuff.
Do you think it will disappear and other social media platforms become more popular?
In my opinion, I'd say yes, but I'm not really sure, like, what that website would be. Twitter and Snapchat are actually pretty popular right now. I think Facebook kind of just killed it because there's just parents and, like, all of your relatives have pretty much taken over Facebook, and a lot of millennials just don't want to use it. I've seen, like, a lot of, like, friends, like, just get embarrassed because, like, their relatives are commenting, like, on their statuses and just kind of, like, telling their parents everything that they're doing. In that case, I kind of really just don't use Facebook. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like parents and relatives can just be so nosy, so.
Thanks, Kristen. Let's stay on Snapchat, be with a report from my co-host Amanda Saguna. Snapchat is very popular on campus. Students are using Snap all the time to share stories and snaps. One goal for Snapchat is to increase the role of Snapchat as a source of news. Snapchat created the Discover feature with a limited number of news publisher partners to allow major publications to distribute news stories to Snapchat users. Amanda, can you please tell us about Discover and how it works, and then help us understand why Snapchat is now creating partnerships with college newspaper publisher and Discover? Let's start with the basics. What is Snapchat Discover?
So Snapchat Discover is a way that new media news outlets can take their articles or whatever they're posting in newspapers or online, and they're putting it on Snapchat, sometimes in condensed versions. So users that are on Snapchat can access it while just on the app at an everyday basis.
Snapchat Discovery for unknown media outlets, different than colleges. How is Snapchat?
It's actually not different at all. The way that colleges are using Snapchat Discover is very similar to the way that new media news outlets are. They are just condensing their articles. They'll just talk about like college things, like things that are going on, like where to find the best food on campus, tips about doing laundry, as well as other news that's going on around campus. So similar to main media outlets that are on Snapchat already, they're posting what they have on their articles, written in the newspaper, on Snapchat, just so it's easier accessible for anyone that's on it.
And are you able to access the college newspaper from anywhere?
Unfortunately, if you're not on the campus that is posting the newspaper on Snapchat, you can't access it. So only if you're in the geofence of the range of the schools where you can read the actual newspaper. You'd have to sign on to someone or go in the location of the college in order to see it.
And do we have a Snapchat Discover?
We actually don't have a Snapchat Discover here at Old Westbury Web Radio. We've had one in the past, but due to some complications, it's just not working out for us right now. But hopefully we'll be able to have one, because I think that Snapchat Discover for colleges is a good way for students that are on campus and don't really know how to like communicate or what's going on around campus can eventually put themselves in and meet new people and have a good way to communicate with everyone else.
And do you think Snapchat is just doing this for like profit-wise, or do you feel like it's more to stay in tune with the college community and the college campus?
I did read somewhere that Snapchat is making some money on it based off of advertisements, but it's also helping schools. I think it's better because they're giving them an actual opportunity to run like a legitimate website, even though it's just through Snapchat, and it's giving them a taste of what it would be like in the real world. And I know that some of the colleges that do have their stuff on Snapchat, they are having some ad revenue increased. So it will benefit both Snapchat and the colleges in the end.
All right. Thanks, Amanda.
All right, so let's get back on the Facebook topic. Facebook is still the biggest social media platform on the planet. According to Statista, Facebook had 2.2 billion monthly active users at the end of 2017. Facebook Messenger has 1.3 billion users worldwide, and Instagram has 800 million users around the world at the beginning of 2018. Facebook may be the biggest, but there are signs that they have been losing users recently. Juan Salazar is here to discuss the losing trend with us. Juan, what kind of users is Facebook losing, and why are they so significant? How can we explain this?
Well, to start off, right now Facebook is losing a lot of its younger users. For some reason, younger generations are finding it less appealing to go on Facebook daily and to sign up to Facebook and to use it daily, constantly experience, oh, what's on your status, how you're feeling. Young people don't want to do that no more. Young people are going to platforms like Snapchat, where you can post a snap, it's gone 24 hours, you constantly post snaps. It's easier to communicate with your friends, and it's less old people, as that's what Facebook is becoming now, because it's a generation thing. Facebook came out about like 10 years ago, I could say, and maybe less, I guess. But it's a generation thing. A lot of people that came up on Facebook are still using Facebook, and the younger generations that are coming out now are starting to use platforms like Snapchat and Instagram.
Do you think that Facebook will eventually become the new MySpace in terms of becoming less cool and less users not really turning towards it?
Well, definitely. I definitely think that Facebook will become the new MySpace, because the way that MySpace flunked out, for those that don't know, MySpace was really one of the top social media outlets before people even knew what social media was. It was at the top of its craft, and once Facebook and like Instagram and other stuff coming out, MySpace started to become dead. Like, nobody wanted to use it no more. So I think the same thing is happening on Facebook, is now that we're seeing a lot of older people on it and less younger people on it, seeing it less cool, it's eventually going to die out like MySpace, I believe.
Now, why do you think so many teens are turning away from Facebook? And it used to be such a big thing, and now nobody really wants to go on it anymore. Is there a specific reason for this?
Well, I personally think that Facebook is losing its cool factor, in terms of before, like Mark Zuckerberg, he said, like Mark Zuckerberg, he made a comment on this, and he said that they took out daily viral videos. So many people that used to log on Facebook, they used to see daily videos of viral videos like World Stop Hip Hop, stuff that used to happen. And Mark Zuckerberg felt like it was a waste of time, and he felt like he wanted his users to get back to interaction and communication. So he decided to take it out. And a report on this said that Facebook has lost nearly 100 million users because of this. And he feels like that he doesn't care, because it feels like it's a waste of time to his users, and he wants them to get back to communication and stuff like that.
Do you think that it's going to be a big topic for older people? Do you think it's going to be a website that more of an older generation are going to begin to use?
Well, definitely, because we're seeing the trend right now where older people are constantly using Facebook. Like, I know my mom uses Facebook, which is, that's a surprise to me. Welcome back to Global Media News from OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Juan Salazar. There are so many viral political memes swirling around the internet. Jay Shah is here with us to talk about political memes and their impact on politics and democracy. Jay, what is a meme? Can you give us some examples of political memes and how they circulate online?
Thanks, Juan. So I don't have a definition for a meme, but I can explain to you what a meme is. A meme is a creative form of expression for the digital world. It can be ironic, it can be funny, it can be a satire, it could be driven towards a cause or an issue, or it could just be something completely random, like a joke, or, you know, the Tide Pod Challenge memes or whatever. So mostly memes are also very relevant to what's trending currently. So mostly political memes, they do have a bit of a history. Now, before the entire internet age, you know, we had cartoons, we had political cartoons, caricatures, we had comic strips and stuff. I mean, I myself remember as a child waking up and starting my day with the last page of the newspaper where all the comic strips and all the funny stuff was. So I'd start my morning off light and funny. And for some reason, I loved, you know, starting my school day completely depressed, because I'd go backwards to the actual news. And eventually, with magazines like Reader's Digest, The New Yorker, you know, cartoons especially became extremely popular. And now with technology, everything has become digitalized, and anybody with a computer and a mouse can, you know, download software, download images, and make a meme or GIFs. Specifically, political memes are something of interest currently because of how much they're being used now for expression, especially because social media has become such a giant platform for political rhetoric. There's a common misconception that social media wasn't as prevalent until Trump became president. But the actual fact of the matter is that social media started to gain more and more recognition in the political world with Obama himself. I mean, he was the first president to actually condone the usage of social media to, you know, spread news about what was going on in the White House. And now we have a crazy man, you know, who doesn't read and calls newspapers that actually provide news fake news and, you know, depends mostly on social media like Facebook, Twitter, and whatever. So...
Yeah. Question to you. Do you feel like Donald Trump, the man who is in the White House right now, do you feel like he's constantly memed? Like he's the number one person to be targeted for a meme?
That is a great question because, so surprisingly, there's statistics and the person in the political field to be memed the most is, can you guess?
Donald Trump?
No, it's Hillary Clinton.
Oh, what?
yeah, there's... There's more memes of Hillary, a crooked Hillary or Killary trying to be cool and relevant and stay in touch with the generation. And it's just funny. And it isn't just recently after she ran for president. They've been prevalent for a while. It's weird.
Do you think it's because she, not to like go off top, but do you feel like is she a woman that she's targeted more?
I think it's just because of who she is as a person. You know, she has flip-flopped on her views so much on policy issues and she isn't the most honest person. She may not be worse than Donald Trump, obviously, considering she's far more educated and cultured than he is. But just because of, you know, her being the most... of all politicians, like the most politician-ish of all politicians. You know, there's like a stereotype how politicians are a certain way. So I think it's mostly because of that.
All right.
Do you feel that these political memes have affected these past campaignings?
Well... they've definitely become more, not just social media, but mostly memes and GIFs have definitely become more prevalent now. I mean, they are becoming a primary source of not just news or information, but just spreading the word or spreading awareness about what's going on in this field. But apparently the first most popular meme in the political field was when... what was it? Who was it that bet $10,000 to the governor, Rick, whatever?
Not sure.
Wait, I gotta look up the details. I think it was Mitt Romney. He bet one of the governors $10,000 on a major policy issue, and that became a serial meme across Tumblr, across 4chan, across... Facebook and whatever. And now we have, you know, not just 4chan, we have Reddit, Omegle, we have Tumblr, we have Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat are like, those are the news platforms now. It's weird. Like, they're not just for, you know, posting pictures online and whatever. They're actually where people go first to see what's going on. And that's where they get all of their updates. So, I don't know. The world's weird now. Am I allowed to say that?
New Media News reporter Noah Miranda has been on the gaming beat. Noah, can you begin by explaining just what Twitch is for those of us who may not know about this streaming platform, and why is Twitch so important in this esports and gaming world?
Twitch is a streaming service used primarily for video games like League of Legends or Dota, which are called MOBAs, which are massively online played games. And they're very team-based. And, like, there's a lot of famous celebrities like Dyrus and Faker who are associated, who stream on Twitch. So fans of the game, fans of their esports team can keep up with them and, like, look at what they do in the game, how they order things, what keys they bind, and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't really start with Twitch. It starts more so with YouTube, because a lot of the online gaming community that is now on Twitch started on YouTube. And YouTube was originally, like, the place to go if you were a gamer and you enjoyed this kind of stuff. There was tons and tons of channels that had different kinds of gameplay for pretty much everything. If you wanted to watch the pinball on Windows XP, there was a YouTube channel for it. But for the longest time, YouTube had this vice grip on gaming content on the internet. Besides, like, dedicated gaming sites, YouTube was the place to go for all gaming news, because there was a content creator for it. But now it seems like things are starting to shift, mainly because early last year, YouTube switched the way around the way it does ad revenue and how much money you make from said ad revenue. It mainly hit people who do fan animations on YouTube at first, and it hit them hard to the point where a lot of famous people, like there's a channel called Egoraptor, who used to post animations regularly, but he had switched over to making his gaming channel the main priority because animations just weren't, like, they wouldn't make him enough money. And after this, things slowly started to, like, affect more people, even the bigger channels, Logan Paul, PewDiePie. There's been a lot of, like, mainly what they did was they allowed people who supply ad revenue to check the videos for content. So, like, if there was swearing, profanity, mention of weapons, drugs, anything like that, they would get hit and the video would be demonetized. So no matter how long it is, they would not be making any money from it. And this is where Twitch comes in. A lot of video gamers on YouTube were profane. They cursed a lot, and this upset a lot of advertisers, so they ended up having their money pulled from their videos. And where Twitch comes in is they can go there and they can stream for crazy amounts of time, 8 to 10 hours, and receive donations directly from fans. So they'd be making a lot more money, and it seemed like it was necessary for almost all people on YouTube to have a Twitch channel that they could go to and make money off of. And a lot of YouTubers I used to watch, personally, have switched over to Twitch full-time as opposed to YouTube because there was no point. YouTube's homepage is also messed up. A lot of subscribers don't get the content from certain creators unless it's, like, getting a ton of views. It'll pop up right at the top. Otherwise, they don't get updated. They have to turn on notifications, which all YouTubers pretty much, they have to note that in their videos. And it just seems like it's getting tiring, and they're scaring away content creators, which in turn scares away the viewers. And they all have gone to Twitch. And Twitch is important because it's not just an esports, like, site. It's also, like, for just entertainment. A lot of people just go there and stream games like Fortnite.
Have you heard of the new RuneScape leagues that are forming now?
There's RuneScape leagues?
Apparently, because it went mobile. So, I don't know, supposedly people are starting to prepare for tournaments and stuff.
I'm not surprised. RuneScape's always been popular, and now that it's gone mobile, it's probably attracting a whole nother, like...
Yeah, it's got better graphics, you know, it's updated, but still the same content, so it's, like, nostalgia creating. So is Twitch used for old games like that as well?
Yes, actually, there was a whole... in 2014 or 2013, I'm not sure, there was a whole channel just dedicated to an entire chat room playing Pokemon Red. They would input the movements and they would control it, but they kept releasing their Pokemon, and it was really funny. It took them around like 3 days to beat the game.
Going back to Twitch and YouTube, saying I know that Twitch has different features, like where people are can subscribe to who they want to watch. I think it's like $5 a month, I believe.
Yeah,
they can subscribe. Is that what taking over from YouTube, that they don't have those kind of features like Twitch has, where people can subscribe to who they want? They can have a chat, they could be modded in the chat, they could have different features like that. Is that what Twitch is taking over right now of YouTube?
I'd say it's definitely an incentive. I wouldn't say it's the main reason, but that monthly subscription helps out a lot. And because people generally become very dedicated to their Twitch streamers, that's when they become mods, and that's when they stay in the chat pretty much all day, monitor things for them. So they do make a consistent stream of money from that, and there's perks for the viewers that keep them invested, that keep them coming back, because they add more emoticons that are used pretty much monthly, weekly. There's a streamer I follow named Whoops who's already added like at least 9 icons within the past like 2 or 3 days.
What do you mean they're adding icons?
Emoticons.
Emojis,
pretty much.
How are they different from emojis, and how is this different from iPhone X's new feature where you can like become an emoji?
It's way different. Mainly because like you design the emotes yourself. Like there's a lot of them.
On what software?
Anything like Photoshop or a thing called GIMP. Like you can make your own art in like if you have like a character.
Right. So it's like basic clip art.
Something. It's kind of something like that. But a lot of them have become well known, especially one called Kappa that comes up in every stream. And
I was gonna ask you. Do you think that YouTube and Twitch play hand in hand? Because I know certain YouTubers that I follow, like they use YouTube to post their videos, but at the same time they use Twitch to stream. So they coincide both Twitch and YouTube. Like they use Twitch to put their videos and put Twitch out there, but Twitch is more for a streaming service and to receive donations. Do you think that they play hand in hand? Do you think like one would exist without the other?
I definitely think they used to play hand in hand. Because, like I said, it was almost almost every Twitch streamer had content creator had a Twitch account also on the back burner where they could stream games regularly on top of the content that they were creating on YouTube. But YouTube's algorithm has changed to the point where some channels it's just no longer worth it to really put the time in to edit the videos on Adobe Premiere or something like that, and then upload them onto YouTube only to get no ad revenue or have the video be demonetized.
Oh, so is that how gamers upload videos of them, you know, live, like playing the games and, you know, strategies and stuff like that? So that's how they do it.
There's things called capture cards. You basically hook them up to your console or your PC.
I didn't realize that was for Twitch or that had any association with Twitch.
Oh, there's a lot of setting up you have to do before you stream. It's extremely complicated. You need a mic like the ones we kind of have here. And on top of that, video cards and like having a PC that's completely functional that streams the game that you're at 60 frames per second, that'll cost a lot of money too unless you're really smart about it.
And my last question to you, do you feel like Twitch is becoming too saturated? Because I know a lot of people want to be like the YouTubers now. Like they want to, because they see a lot of people getting money off Twitch and not really off YouTube. But do you think it's becoming too saturated to the point where like even their fanboys are starting to start channels and stuff like that?
Yes, actually. The same thing kind of happened with YouTube back in the day. When PewDiePie first became popular, a lot of kids thought they could be him by just putting on a pair of headphones and screaming into their microphones. So Twitch has had a lot of people trying to be like Tyler One or Macy J, who's a big Rainbow Six Siege streamer. Like, that's always going to happen. You can't really control that. There's followers who will try and do the same thing that you're doing to make the same money that you're making off of it.
Oh, and have you noticed that all of these YouTubers, YouTube, it could be just them, but their podcasts, their videos and stuff like that, they've subsequently been removed. So if you look for PewDiePie, the last time I searched for a PewDiePie video, I found only 2, and they weren't even from his direct account. They were from like external third-party users. So
I kind of understand with what they did with PewDiePie, to be honest. He said
I'm just using him as an example.
Oh yeah, of course. In some instances, it's definitely unfair, like, that YouTube, especially when they have channels like Logan Paul, who's still around after all the distasteful content he's created, hinder other channels just because they're not as popular, they don't make what YouTube wants in a channel, like.
Didn't he apologize and then post another dumb video?
There's a lot of dumb videos he's made, it's not just the Suicide Forest
one. No, all his videos are him doing dumb stuff.
Yeah.
So that's irrelevant, but I'm talking about being PC and, you know, with the whole showing a dead body and then making light of something that is such a pressing issue for today. You know, I think he he put up an apology video, and then that ended in like a psych situation. Like, psych, just kidding.
I think his thumbnail was just like, there's a transparent image of the thumbnail of the dead body video in the background, kind of, so you could sort of see it. Like, he was making light of the whole situation, like he didn't learn his lesson from showing this poor deceased person's body, and he's just trying to make a whole joke out of it, which a lot of people, on Twitter, have already shown, like, a lot of distaste for. So, I really don't think he's learned his lesson, and the fact that YouTube still kind of clings to his name, because his brother, Jake Paul, also makes a lot of money for them. They're very popular.
So, how big of a role does YouTube play with in terms of Twitch? And, like, can you just give us a final, like, a comparison?
I would say that around 2013 to 2014, YouTube definitely played more of a bigger role, because there was a lot more content creators on YouTube. There was a lot of people who relied on it mainly, and this is when Twitch was still budding. But as time has gone on, it went from equal to now YouTube is kind of taking a backseat to Twitch. I wouldn't say yet, but at least in the gaming area of YouTube, Twitch has definitely become the preferable service, and YouTube is kind of withering slowly. Hopefully, the changes that YouTube will make in the coming months will kind of turn former content creators back to YouTube, but for now, its future is definitely uncertain. Amanda, back to you.
Thanks, Noah, and thanks to Juan Salazar for hosting with me this weekend. Many thanks to Nikita Hines and Ricardo Morales for producing our show. And thank you to our engineers, Jay Shaw and Joe Freiman. Today, we heard reports from Noah Miranda, Elijah Petaway, Juan Salazar, Kristen Schmeling, Amanda Saguna, and Jay Shaw. For more media news and resources, check out our latest post on The Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcasts.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.